You could also argue for the date of the new law. There's one other date that's a variable date, and that would fall between 74 and 85, and it would be the date of acknowledgement of the local comprehensive plan. My response to you is 1985. All county comprehensive plans were acknowledged. It was a fairly significant change in the state of art of planning in Oregon. It's arguable that that could go somewhere else, but I'm offering you what I think is a reasoned date.
Paula?
Oh.
So you're saying that you wouldn't go back to 73. Is that what you're saying?
What I would say is if, for those people that purchased their parcel before 85.
Before 85, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Further questions? I want to give you just a couple minutes, if you can, to touch on specifics, on some of the specifics that you've given us on the retroactive concept piece that was introduced last week. And if you want to, we've dragged you into some of that conversation
you have.
We're questioning today. So if you want to hit those concepts, we're happy to have you do that and take a few more questions. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the proposal, you have my written comments in before you. A couple of key points about the definitions. The definitions as it relates to receiving area and to the question of Representative Schrader, I believe. Receiving areas, I would recommend to you, should be all urban growth boundaries and all unincorporated communities in the state of Oregon, if you establish receiving areas. It also needs to include unincorporated communities, which would be rural and urban unincorporated communities. That's not included, not in the law. The second point is related to tract. You need to, I'm not ordering you, I'm suggesting that you need to delete the reference to tract. Tract is a term that is a significant part of the problem. As a matter of fact, there's a strange irony that tract, as used in the land use rules, is a regulation in which you are offering compensation in the next section under qualification. That the term of art or science that you need to use there are simply lot and parcel as defined by ORS Chapter 92 and 215, and I have those citations for you later in these comments, but not tract. Tract is part of the problem. With regard to qualification for compensation, another important point about those who would carry this out, the definition of owner that's proposed here is more restrictive than the definition of owner in 215.705(6). Here's the situation. My father passes away. I inherit the property. I am no longer the owner as defined here. I'm no longer eligible for the benefits. I think it needs to carry through the family as the as an inheritance issue. Tract we've mentioned. Another important point, Mr. Chairman, is the scope. As it's currently written, it only applies these standards to agricultural and forest lands, especially in western and southwestern Oregon. There's a big component of Oregon that's called mixed use. They're farm forest lands, and so this would be better written to say zone to comply with Goal 3 and 4 rather than saying ag and forest, because there's also mixed use. Let's see. We talked about the date a little bit. I will skip on to, and I've given you comments about types of compensation. I would like to talk just a bit about types of compensation. In the proposal, I would suggest that one additional type of compensation needs to be added, and that's a waiver of regulations. It's the simplest solution to Measure 7 claims. It is the simplest solution to Measure 7 claims. The proposal should be added to allow an exception to the laws which prohibit a dwelling. This is a viable form of compensation. As a planning administrator in Oregon, as an Oregon planner for 30 years, I believe this option would probably be most valued by our citizens. Citizens desire to build on their property. That's why they own it. They purchased it for that purpose. As I mentioned, a bundle of cash in their hand or the relocation of a home site to an urban or urban unincorporated area doesn't achieve that citizen's goal. And so that waiver, I think, becomes very important.
Question?
Yes.
let's see. All the Democrats raise their hand. Interesting.
Well, let's start alphabetically. Representative Beck.
If a waiver were to be part of this, of two questions. Would it be at the acquiring, at the agency, the responsible agency of the state, would it be discretionary on the state's part? Or should the landowner, if the state sees a broad public purpose to actually acquiring the property versus granting the waiver, should the state have that discretion on a case-by-case basis? Let me ask you two questions, and you can respond to both of them. The other question would be, if the state had the discretion and decided that in one case or another, a waiver was appropriate and not violating some broad state principle, should the state have the ability to direct or the discretion as to where to direct where development should occur on the property in order to protect some state broad public interest?
I really appreciate Representative Beck's questions. They're very leading, but they're excellent. The first answer is yes. No, actually, it's one of my next points. The answer to the first question is yes. And we propose that if there's a prevailing public interest, that the choice for compensation should still be there. Yes. With regard to the second, I would say no at the state level, but there should be siting and locational standards that could be applied. And if you use that exceptions process that I mentioned early on, that would happen because there would be a partnership of sort in that review. So yes to your first question, that choice should be available. And no, as far as the state specifying it, but there should be some performance standards or siting standards that would cover that at a local level.
Are you done? All right, then I'm going to take an alphabetical to Representative Lowe, then Representative Schrader, then Representative Close.
Well, we're really stirring up your
Representative Lowe.
Stirring the pot. Well, I'm stunned, but Representative Beck asked the questions that popped into my mind. But just, I mean, I'm not stunned that you asked them. It's just, you know, I don't regard myself as a Portland liberal.
You can't even get a stroke from another Metro Democrat.
I am not a Metro Democrat. I am a Clackamas County, and we are not Metro. We're
that's practically rural Oregon.
Truly at the center of the universe. I guess I was thinking about a fellow I know in my district who has owned some property in a wetland.
Mm-hmm.
And I am wondering about the standards that a locality, you know, how much local control can we render onto the counties to articulate the standards and to come up with a criteria so that those who get waivers aren't a privileged class and those who don't get waivers are dog meat. You know, that's not fair. We need to have some system that's consistent and fair to all of the citizens, so everybody knows what the rules are. Because all politics is local, particularly planning politics. I don't know how it works in Douglas County, but I do know how it works in Clackamas County, and I've never seen such wailing and gnashing of teeth over anything as a local land use planning decision that somebody felt they weren't treated equally with their neighbors. So how would you go about achieving some degree of consistency so our Oregon remains our Oregon?
This rural component is silent on, and I wasn't certain why, conspicuously silent in my opinion, on other environmental issues that you spoke to in the urban piece, which might be wetlands or riparian buffers or habitat or whatever it might be, which meant to me on first blush that those would still be applicable standards. And so the preservation of those key resources that we're trying to protect under Goal 5 or Goal 6 of the statewide planning goals or Goal 3 and 4 would still be incorporated into this decision-making process. They would be the siting issues that you would still work with. That's number one. Number two is that if there was a prevailing public interest, and I am not going to define that just yet, but it could be the preservation of a wetland, a habitat corridor, it could be a density issue, you could provide for the compensation option or choice. The question is, what happens when we run out of compensation, one, or what happens when there are issues even in Douglas County that have a prevailing public interest versus a individual right. And I think my county commissioners would err on the side of the individual right, but that's not always in the best interest of our community. But there are those individual cases that it doesn't make a big difference. And I think you'd be able to distinguish that. I don't have the distinguishing tool for you right now, but I believe you'd be able to distinguish that if you provided both opportunities.
Thank you.
Representative Schrader, then Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You talk about the types of compensation, I think you speak well to the fact that people have visions and plans, and really that's the reason they get the land. They're not out there to make a lot of money. They can make a lot of money other ways. But then we have to weigh that again, and it kind of gets to your track discussion. I appreciate your expertise, but there's a little conundrum into how many individual parcels can one own or own, and we get into that. So I guess the question would be, if to the extent you even feel comfortable doing it, if an owner has a lot of different parcels, how many visions per se should we satisfy before their vision is met, would you guess, if that owner had a lot of parcels? I mean, that's an unfair question a little bit. I'm just trying to get at that. I don't have a feel for your neck of the woods.
Well, it isn't, but I think it's a fair question because it's a tough one that you have to deal with. You could have an old orchard. You could have a ranch, 100 acres, and it could be 10-acre parcels. 10-acre lots in a platted subdivision, but it was an old orchard tract. Where do you draw that line? If you use tract, you would probably constrain, you could conceptually constrain that to only one opportunity. If you use the statutory definition of lot or parcel, you would probably open it up to 10 opportunities. I do not have the answer for you. I just know that those are the two ends of the spectrum.
Sure enough.
My position would be, and normally we deal less with the orchard tract issues, more with what has been a subdivision since 1970 or a partition since 1980, and those are the cases where people truly believe they have. So I'm thinking out loud. What you could say is, you could say old orchard tract platting doesn't qualify, but platting, partitioning, or subdivision actions that have occurred since 1973, the creation of the goals, and whatever new date you pick, would qualify. That would put a constraint or limitation, and I had only thought of that now as we talk, and I'm trying to give you a good qualified response. That would take care of the old orchard tract issue, which really weren't designed on the same basis that subdivisions were designed over the last 20 or 30 years.
Thank you very much.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it brief. Your response to Representative Beck kind of concerns me about having the broad public purpose. You know, it seems like a huge loophole to me. It seems like that's where we've been for 30 years, is that the broad public purpose oversees the private landowner, and that's what Senate Bill 100 did. So how do you make sure that that's a limited situation instead of that trumps every single building permit?
I think it's self-enforcing by the amount of money you set aside for the compensation fund, because it's not going to be an unlimited pot. And you're going to need to make value judgment decisions on where that's used and not used. And I think that's the controlling factor.
Any questions? Further questions? You got a couple more comments, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Mr.
feel
Chairman.
Free. Go ahead. We know you came a long way, and we want to take your comments.
I'd like to provide a suggestion. There's a provision for deadlines of claims, and this is just pragmatic on my part, but as the proposal's drafted, it says you can hassle a citizen for a year And if you do that and you don't come to a conclusion, then you can waive the regulations. The provision should be one of the compensation alternatives rather than hassling a citizen for a year and then waiving regulations. I don't think that's good public policy. Now, the other may not be, others may not judge my position to be good public policy, but I'd say that's problematic. There are a couple of other things that I'd like to bring to your attention, and I'll wrap this up. Under determination of qualifications, right now the county's responsible entity or local government is responsible for the final local land use decision. This proposal suggests a third review body, suggests that the Department of Administrative Services, who has no land use staff, no expertise in land use law, make a judgment to substitute their opinion and their decision for local governments on final land use decisions. I find that objectionable, inappropriate, and should be deleted. I'm speaking on behalf of local government. I just don't think that's well thought out. I don't have an alternative because I think it should be deleted. With regard to, I'll skip to the effective date issue. If some of the suggestions that we have made are considered by the committee, the effective date issue, the issue of limited funding for compensation is addressed. This says this is effective when funds are set aside, and this is only effective as long as you have funds. Well, if you have the waiver as an alternative compensation tool, then this funding issue becomes less significant. Just offer that to you for consideration. As it relates, and I'm bringing all the way back to transferable development rights under the definitions that are included in almost the end of the bill, there's a definition under development rights at that in that near the end of the proposal that uses lot or parcel. I'd represent that that's correct, but it's inconsistent with the early part of the proposal that uses tract. I'd like to see you keep lot or parcel. Taking into consideration the needs of effective transferable development rights programs, the definition of receiving area should be urban growth boundaries and unincorporated communities throughout the state. This expands the receiving areas. One of the major flaws of unsuccessful transferable development rights program is insufficient receiving areas, and that's something that you should consider. And with regard to sending areas, in the context of what you're doing here, I believe it's a mistake to try to identify specific sending areas, because the sending areas are anywhere in the county. There are remote properties in this corner, that corner, this. There's not just a segment, a section, an area of the county that's going to be eligible for this. It should be every property owner in the county. So the sending area definition needs to be deleted, and in doing that, it resolves some of the other issues that are included in the proposal, and those are tied in my comments. Two other points, and I'm done. Under the establishment of compensation and conservation authority, my suggestion is that you add a new bullet there on duties that says the authority is to determine if there's a public interest to pay cash compensation or authorize the alternative waiver of regulations. That's kind of where I related to the self-enforcing. There's only going to be a certain pool of money, and the significance of the decision, the impact, the participation that takes place may help decide that. I'd offer that. And then finally, this hopefully will sound like a broken record from other local governments as you go through this process, but under the definition of receiving, or under receiving districts in the conclusion of the proposal, there's a proposal to create a supersiting agency which will identify receiving districts in local government areas. Local governments have historically opposed supersiting. Definitionally, it's a problem. We oppose it throughout other parts of the statute. And if you recognize that the receiving, that the sending areas and receiving areas are redefined as I suggested, then this can go away and doesn't need to be an issue. With that,
can I ask a question?
You may ask a question, Representative Wolf.
Thank you. I'm intrigued by many of your suggestions, particularly the part about making 90% of the potential claimants whole by allowing them a dwelling. But I also love the vision that was laid out for Oregon and in the Tom McCall years and the with the land use planning and preserving our farmland, because I really like to eat farms. food, and I think we, you know, we don't want to cut our agricultural economy out from under our feet. How can we have our cake and eat it too?
There are some inherent conflicts built in here. We have to draw a line. We've drawn lines in the sand. Those lines, in my opinion, in a vote of Measure 7, have said we've drawn the line in the wrong place and we've had a backlash. We need to look at drawing that line. I've suggested throughout this some limitations, some constraints, some parameters, some procedures that will help protect on those sidings, protection of special areas, siding standards that could be addressed, maybe an exceptions process if necessary. I think that's the way. We're going to miss on some, but I believe we're going to garner a much greater support for the Oregon planning system, and we're going to protect it. I agree. I'm invested in the Oregon planning system, and I really believe in it. And if we can take care of the right to build a house on a legally created parcel, if we can take care of substantial reduction, like you've suggested in the proactive part in urban areas, by loss based on land use regulations, we can probably strengthen the land use program, and we can probably move on to the next decade or so of strong protection of our resources. We have an excellent and distinguished Oregon planning system. I've been involved nationally. This is not to toot horn, but I'm president of the National Association of County Planners. I know how good Oregon's program is. I know how effective it is. I know that it's better and different than Georgia and Florida and just about anywhere else. And I also know that our decision-making, although it's complained about, is swift in comparison to most areas of the United States. We're moving the line in the sand, but I think I'm trying to suggest alternatives that will allow us to still largely protect our resource base.
One last question, if
you
could. I'm thinking about how this is going to transpire, how this will unfold, how the claims will come in and when. And I'm wondering what you think about this idea of having a six-month period during which people can make claims, after which the claims are precluded, for past actions, depending upon what date we pick, so that we know what we're looking at and then can do some economic planning for it.
That just put me right on the spot. That I could live with that.
I get this idea from estate planning. You post notice in a paper, you get creditors get 4 months to. And it seems to me that, you know, we have to deal with this problem and move on, and then deal with it in a prospective way instead of...
Representative Lowe, I like that. I like the limited duration. We're talking about fairness. I would represent to you, one, I don't think 6 months is adequate. And number two, it would have to be prefaced on an individual property owner notice, probably by local governments, hopefully funded by the state of Oregon, to assure that everyone had notice, opportunity, and could take advantage if they were going to take advantage. But I think the concept is one that would be compatible with making this work.
6 months too long. I would assume that
too short.
Too short.
Yeah.
1 year.
As
you could get notice in your tax statement.
Just briefly, Representative Lowe, in the current bill, I think the period in which to assert the claim is 36 months, is I think how it's currently drafted. Isn't that right?
That's right. Is it 2003?
Yeah, in the retroactive piece, retroactive claims would have a 36-month period to come in and assert their claim. So I guess as between 6 months and 36 months, is there someplace you think it's more fair or less fair?
This is a seat-of-the-pants opinion, watching how land use information is transmitted and how people react and deal with it. My seat-of-the-pants reaction was I was going to say 24 months. I was going to say 2 years.
Are there any further questions? Representative Beck.
Thank you. Your testimony. I think you come from a community where these issues are
what's the word, just, I think, sort of...
Real.
Ground center. Ground center. That's not right.
Ground zero.
Ground zero.
There you go. Grand Central Station,
right.
Ground zero.
We had a discussion in the committee some point about if compensation were appropriate claim in response to a claim, is it appropriate for the state, local government, whomever is responsible, to receive something for that? And I guess let's take your 30-acre parcel example. If the state decided to grant somebody one home on that 30 acres, or even better, buy, acquire the development right, isn't it appropriate then for the state to obtain long-term perpetual certainty that that property will not be developed?
It's part of the balance. It's a reasonable part of the balance, whether it be a conservation easement, whether it be a covenant. In the proposal, there's a concept that no development can take place until the property is appropriately added to an urban growth boundary, we'd suggest, or rural community. But that seems like part of that balancing that would be appropriate.
You wouldn't object to, you think it's reasonable to, if we're paying for something, make sure we get the zoning doesn't change, or state law doesn't change in 2 years, and what we paid for is essentially...
That is a reasonable part of the balance.
Yeah.
Any further questions? We really appreciate you coming up. You did a good job providing, I think, the committee some areas to talk about and for us to engage on, and we appreciate it very much. Appreciate having your written comments, too, as we evaluate particularly wording changes and definitional changes in the draft, also very, very helpful. So thanks again, and we hope we'll see you again before this process is over, and we'll think fondly of you when we're talking, and we know you're listening to us on the internet.
Thank you.
With that, I want to bring Don Schellenberg, who signed up today from the Oregon Farm Bureau, forward.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. And then I will just tell the committee, it had been our intent to do a section-by-section walkthrough today. We lost our legislative council drafter. She was going to have to leave at 5 o'clock for a pre-existing engagement, and it seemed like our flow was going well enough with the discussion we were having that it didn't make sense to break from that. We'll bring her back on Tuesday to do that section by section on a newer version of the draft as it keeps getting sort of modified and added to, so it'll be more useful probably anyway on Tuesday. So that's where we're going to be. So after Mr. Schellenberg's testimony, we'll adjourn the meeting and go back down to conduct business on the floor. Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I'd like to start out by seconding very much of what Mr. Kubik has told you today. Other times, I'd say we haven't agreed a lot, but today, what I've heard from him, I'd have to agree with a very high percentage of what he has said. And so I'll just maybe add a few things to that. And I realize that the rural concepts document that was made available last week was only a concepts document, not any official language. However, the language used does raise some issues and questions that need to be clarified before any official draft is formulated. Generally speaking, Farm Bureau supports the direction that the draft is taking. We believe that the retroactive compensation for taking in rural areas for the loss of the right to build a dwelling or divide the land is in keeping with Farm Bureau policy. We also support the compensation being in the form of cash for both categories. I cannot say at this time if we could support a limited waiver provision if cash is not available, as is provided in the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3. What we do not want is the waivers being the only compensation just because no funds were appropriated. That would be tantamount to eliminating the land use planning. Again, I recognize language is conceptual, but on page 1, under the bullet at the bottom of the page, it says, quote, if the owner had a right to build a dwelling, unquote. Does that right, quote, mean outright, or does it mean under the qualifications that existed at the time? We would suggest that the latter interpretation would be the most appropriate. On the next line, it says, quote, at the time the owner acquired the tract, and, end quote. A farmer may have purchased a tract with a dwelling and under the former law sold a portion of the tract with the dwelling. As late as 1993, the landowner could have established a farm dwelling but cannot now meet the new state criteria. This language would prevent compensation for the loss of the ability to cite a farm dwelling. The language should be replaced with the words prior to a land use regulation adopted after the acquisition that removed that right. So there's some clarification in what the intent was there. On the last line of page one and then the first paragraph on page two, the draft mentioned a schedule of priorities. Now, I've probably missed something along the line because I don't know why there would be priorities or what they would achieve, and I apologize if that's gone by me. What is still missing, and this is not a part of my drafted comments there, what is still missing, and Mr. Kubik mentioned that, is compensation for Goal 5 takings. That's still an issue that we would be concerned about. This draft does not address that issue at all. The language in the effective date section causes concern. Does the phrase, quote, and provides a source of funds to make compensation, end quote, mean that the act, even if adopted by the voters, doesn't become effective if a source of funds is not provided? It's our position that the act must include a provision for a source of funds, not hope it shows up later. Our Land Use Advisory Committee will be looking at this issue next Thursday. It's taken a long time to get a group of farmers together this time of the year. We're trying to plan ahead, and I think I've got a good group coming next Thursday, so we're going to take a look at this next Thursday. One critical issue that has not been discussed yet is the funding mechanism, and any proposal must not weigh heavily on rural landowners in that regard. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Don. Some of the comments that you've made are comments, some of the things... I'm rolling this out in pieces, and so this draft always has some holes in it because as we're getting legislative council, getting the language out. So the funding component isn't in there now because the committee hasn't had any real discussion about it, so we're leaving a lot of big blank spaces. My plan is on Thursday, a week from today, the legislative fiscal officer, Paul Warner, will come in and make a presentation, not on any particular funding proposal, but on a myriad of options the committee could address, and to talk about the economic ramifications of those options. So if you want to, if any of your farmers can stick around and not go back and plant in the afternoon, they may want to watch some of that and get their opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we do intend to address that issue at that committee meeting as much as we can. If there's any way that we could get that information that day in time for our meeting, which starts in the morning, that would be appreciated, and we could have a good discussion of that.
Sure. If I have that information available to me, I'm happy to release it as early as I get it so people can start reviewing it in advance of Mr. Warner's presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that.
You bet. Is there anybody else who wants to say anything? Any questions for Mr. Schellenberg?
I just wanted to comment.
Representative Beck?
We've been talking about this notion of waiver, and I think among some circles, there's sort of conventional wisdom that there can be no provision for waivers. I'm not necessarily against some form of waiver, but I do think what you outline here is really, really important point, that if there's going to be a provision for waivers, it has to be done with the choice at that time of there being sufficient funds to compensate with cash. And I think it would be a big mistake to go down a path that allows waivers if the compensation fund is so poorly capitalized that choice doesn't exist. And those two components, if the waiver is going to be there, there has to be sufficient, and I think we're talking a lot of money here, make sure that compensation in every circumstance is a choice. So I just think it's an important point you raise in here and one I've been pondering myself.
Representative Lowe.
For example, just to build on that, I think that if we have to go down the road of waivers, a waiver plan in each the county might not be a bad idea. Let me give you an example of what I'm thinking that was suggested by what Representative Beck just said. And that is, say there's four farms that meet at Four Corner, and they all want to build a house on there. Why can't we get a common plan to get those houses in within line side of those same four corners to preserve that farmland for farming to the greatest extent possible, and in that way have our cake and eat it too? If we have some kind of a plan to where we can consolidate some of this stuff where possible.
Mr. Chairman, Don Schoenberg, if I might just comment on that. In some cases that may work, in other cases it may not, depend on the topography of the parcels. That may be where the very best land is, and you would want to, farmers usually want to build their house not on the very best land, but over where it's not so good, so they can take the most advantage of the land that they do have.
Okay, thank you very much, Don.
Thank you,
is there anyone else here who wants to address the committee before we adjourn for the day? Thank you for your attendance. We're adjourned.